This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
Second episode of the latest iteration of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we have former WFAN radio host, current CBS Sports radio host, Mike Francesa's first successor, and professional hot take artist Maggie Gray joining us. Maggie, thanks for coming on. And I got to be honest, when I reached out to see if you would come on the podcast, I was expecting you to say that I needed to clear it with Odyssey first or clear it with some sort of PR department because they wouldn't let your co-host Andrew Perloff eat peanut butter on air. So I'm like, there's no way that they're going to let their hosts go out and do interviews on their own.
Okay, so behind the scenes, I did actually clear this with the people at CBS Sports Radio. Yeah. And, you know, since this is a podcast that is, I think a lot of people in the industry listen to this podcast, I kind of want to fill in just a little bit on some stuff behind the scenes. So when my co-host Andrew Perloff ate an entire jar of peanut butter in 20 minutes, he actually ended up eating a jar and a half because he was so like enthusiastic and he was doing so well with the peanut butter. We needed to make that be as big as it could be. And so we did, you know, play up that part of it, right? About, and it was a good lesson for us, like in radio and I'm sure in television also, but when you have like a repeat audience and then you're trying to grow that audience, to make these little tentpole events seem as big as they possibly can, that's like a good way to not only keep your current audience like intrigued and give them something, but also to expand your audience. I mean, that day was like the biggest YouTube day we had, some of the best, like, you know, like coverage that we got for the show. So it was this kind of silly, stupid thing about whether Perloff could eat a jar of peanut butter, but we made it seem like he was running the Boston Marathon or something. Like, it was this big Herculean effort, and we were pleased that everyone sort of got behind it.
Yeah, I think you guys did a really good job of playing that up, but it was actually paused by the company. Like, that wasn't just made for radio bit, was it?
Or was it?
Well, I kind of
can't disclose.
Yeah, I kind of think that it was based on the fact that I know Giannotti had commented that when he was trying to eat Buffalo Wings on air, that they had similarly paused that stunt. And
so I knew that because I had also, because eating challenges in radio is kind of like, it's well-worn territory, but something that people can't get enough of. So when I was on WFAN, again, this happened organically, very naturally, when I was doing the show with Chris Carlin and Bart Scott, said I couldn't eat a whole pizza. And I said, of course I could. And I ended up eating a whole pizza in 2 hours. And our boss at the time, Mark Chernoff, was like very worried about me afterwards, and we kind of played it up. And so then I think that unfortunately, me kind of messing around with Mark Chernoff kind of laid the groundwork that Gio was going to need to get clearance and then beyond. Yeah.
Okay. So
all fun.
What was it, your getting sick after eating the pizza? Like, do you think the company got a little bit more concerned after that happened?
No, I learned a valuable lesson.
Just for, for people that don't know, you did eat an entire pizza on air in 2018, and then you got sick after eating that pizza.
Oh, let's not beat around the bush. Puked in the Mike Francesa studios, like in the garbage can, but got sick. Not my best day and my worst day all together in one, but isn't that like that on radio sometimes? But no, what I did afterwards is I made a mistake, and I shouldn't have done this, and I was trying to be funny, but Mark Chernoff was concerned about me. I was fine after I vomited, but he was a little concerned about me. So he was like, check in with me later this evening. Let me know how you're doing. So I sent him a text message, said, Mark, I'm on my way to the hospital. Just kidding. And I think I gave him like a mini panic attack. And so that's why this ended up going on. Bottom line, don't joke around with your bosses. Don't do that because they're dealing with stress that you don't even know or
see. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the beauty of radio is that it's live, it's unscripted, it's organic. And like, I'm not saying they should allow necessarily 90s era Howard Stern bits to come back, but I did kind of like, I questioned the state of radio when they had to pause to assess whether or not to allow Perloff to eat peanut butter on air. So I guess maybe that's just me overreacting a little bit if I'm now finding out that there's a chance that it was allowed. But like I like the fact that radio that you can count on those organic bits coming about.
And that's one of the big things that Spike Eskin, who's the program director at WFAN now, came from WIP and oversees all of CBS Sports Radio. I don't have his actual title in front of me, but it's like really big and impressive. And he deserves it because he saw that peanut butter thing and was like, we were going to do it the next day. And he was like, no, that's not how this works. Like, he's really great at like assessing when you might have something and then jumping in and telling you like, wait, let's try it this way. Let's try do it this way a little bit, do it that way. And those, like, they're not insignificant tweaks. They might seem small, but they end up kind of building. And like, we booked that. We had the guy from Man versus Food. Like, we really built it up. And because we have time, you know, we have a time to slow burn things a little bit. And he was great at jumping in, and that's what you want from a boss, you know, like great feedback, of course. And with things like this, like, hey, help us get over the finish line to turn this from a little show bit into something that might catch on a little bit more.
What do you think the state of radio and specifically national radio is? Because ESPN Radio just had a bunch of layoffs. ESPN Radio is also kind of been a revolving door of shows and hosts for a while now. You look at Fox Sports Radio, it's a brand that has more stability and star power with Colin Cowherd and Dan Patrick. And I feel like CBS Sports Radio, and we'll put Odyssey's financials aside in this, but CBS Sports Radio is kind of in the middle of those two. Host.
Jim Rome, I would put up with both Cowherd and with Dan.
Yeah, right. And that definitely helps carry CBS Sports Radio's lineup. Do you feel like national radio is a platform that's still set up for the future?
I do. You know, I think that radio will always have a place in sports talk and, like, frankly, I guess, like, in society. And it's funny, I'll bring back something that my boss Spike Eskin said, which I thought was really smart, was like, imagine if podcasts came first, right? And everything was always recorded, and, you know, you had some ads or whatever. And that was the way we did things forever. And then all of a sudden, it'd be like, wait a minute, what if I could get this live and you could call in and you just have to sit through a couple commercial breaks, but like, you could live interact with the hosts. Wouldn't we be saying, wow, radio is this incredible invention and people would be dying for it? And I try to keep that in mind because I think there will always be a place for human interaction that is live. And listen, I love podcasts too, and our show is a podcast, and I appreciate that part of it. But I think that there will always be, especially with sports and how the news cycle is so quick, I think there's always going to be a place for live reaction. And then it's sort of like, you know, making yourself stand out in national because, you know, you're not going to be hitting the topics that like every single person is interested in. It's more just like making it about the stars, making it about the biggest topics of the day, and making the show about the show. Yeah. And if people want to hang out with you, then they don't mind if you're talking about the 49ers quarterback situation, even if they live in Atlanta. You know, if you're talking about the biggest stories of the day and your spin on them, or like the great sports debates and all that stuff that's worked on radio forever, I think it just comes back down to, does your audience want to hang with you? And do they like your personalities? Like, national, local, it's all personality driven, in my opinion.
When you do a show, who do you envision your audience being? Is it still the person in the car like sports radio was for forever? Is it the podcast listener now? Are there specific markets you're trying to appeal to as a national show?
You know, it's serving all those masters. Like, I think your person is still in the car. We do think about that a lot. And we also think about, you know, your average listener, and I believe this is still true, and someone will probably check me on it if it's not, but the average listener is tuning in for like 11 minutes. So you don't get necessarily a ton of time with people when they're in the car. They're just you're part of their routine.
Right.
And so, like, thinking about that, and if there's a big story one day, like you can do it a little bit over and over again. Just come at it from different points of view. And that's true on national and local, and making sure that, you know, you're trying to hit the biggest stuff every day. I also think about our YouTube situation. Like, we're on YouTube and we absolutely love it, because that's our chat on YouTube is kind of like this sort of, I don't know, like it's another like audience that we're interacting with in real time. So they can almost serve a little bit as like callers, like, hey, a comment in the chat does the same thing that a caller does in terms of moving the conversation forward or taking it in a fun direction. So I think about our users are the people who are in front of their computer, either listening on a smart speaker or have a tab up on their laptop, like while they're working, and we're like background noise. So I think it's that. I think it's people in the car, and then like the podcast and the social media part.
Does it bother you that you're not on terrestrial radio in New York anymore, or is terrestrial radio not really even necessarily as pertinent to the show?
You know, I think because we're also streaming on the Odyssey app. So if you are in New York and if you want to hear us, like it's just a tab away. Like you can listen to Fan or you can listen to CBS. And the way that cars are now, you know, your Bluetooth, you're plugging it with an aux cable, feels like a dated reference, but the sound's crystal clear. So I don't know. I don't think necessarily in terms of where are we on, even though we do have an idea, like our affiliates and we understand where we're on. But for me, it's like, can you just put out a fun, entertaining show every day and bring people into your world wherever they are?
Right. And does being on CBS Sports Radio allow you to be more creative than if you're on WFAN and where you're kind of forced to talk about Mets and Yankees every day over the summer? Or did you like having that crutch even of being able to talk about the Mets and Yankees every day over the summer and opening it up for callers?
Listen, there's something like very, what do I say? Like there's something kind of nice knowing that you can go on WFAN. And believe me, it's not this easy. It's not by any stretch, but you say like Yankees bullpen, hey, and then like all of a sudden the phones light up. But that's a challenge too, because you don't want to sound generic also, but you understand that there is a hardcore New York sports audience that does really care about the Yankees bullpen, the Mets bullpen, the backup point guard for the Knicks. Like you can do the minutiae. Nothing is too small in New York, which is really cool and fun. And I really loved that part of it, but I don't think it's about like whether you're creative to me doesn't matter if you're national or local. It's only about what your philosophy is of your show. Like Boomer and Geo, they do creative stuff and they're a local show. They're also national. I know they're on CBS Sports Network, but it's like they're a local morning show, but
serving a local audience.
Totally. But they color outside the lines all the time. So I just think it's about who you are if you're a solo, or what your chemistry is like if you're with a co-host, you know, and the world you're trying to build. And like, if that's a creative one, whether you're in a local market or national, I think it's going to work.
How is building a show with building chemistry with one co-host instead of two? Because with WFAN at the start, you were trying to build chemistry with Chris Carlin and Bart Scott. Yeah. Now it's just, and obviously now you're a year into the show, but now it's just Andrew Perloff. So what about that difference of only having one co-host to have to work with to get started?
You know, I think it's all the same things. Like Perloff and I knew each other from Sports Illustrated for almost a decade. So we knew each other for 8 years. So we had a little bit of a head start on the chemistry stuff, but then figuring out how you want to do a radio show definitely is something. What I think makes the best shows is when you have the two hosts, if you have two hosts, and you're getting their point of view and you're getting them going back and forth and stuff. But then you also have like other bits of sound to kind of fill in like the audio space. So whether that's sound bites, whether it's fun sound that you're using, whether it's audio like design, whether it's your producer and the board op that you make characters on the show, even if it's two or three, it's always good, I think, to have like other voices chipping in, not grabbing the microphone and taking it forever, but like chipping in. And I think that creates like that more universe kind of feel.
Yeah. And a bit of a community aspect.
Yeah. And everyone's got like a different, plays a different character on the show.
Right.
So like in my current show now, which was different from when I was with Carlin and Bart, where I was kind of like the journalist of the three, you know, I was coming from SI and I was like the journalist and Carlin was like the talk show host and opinionist and Bart was the former athlete, obviously. With Perloff, he was McLovin on the Dan Patrick show for 12 years. And he is like the Ivy League nerdy guy, analytics, you know, that. And I'm now like the fan,
yeah,
you know, and I'm a little bit more of the fan and he's more of like the analytics. And then we come at it from different points of view.
So did moving from WFAN to CBS Sports Radio, did it feel like a demotion? Did it feel like a promotion or was it just the next opportunity that came your way?
I mean, I felt great about it when I got the opportunity to go back to national. Cause like when I was at SI, I never thought I was going to get the WFAN job.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was in the running for the WFAN job until I was offered the job. So that was like this very cool, like, I'm so grateful for that, like departure from the way that I was going, which was national, national, national. I was doing SI and doing a weekend show on CBS Sports Radio. So yep. Like cool opportunity of a lifetime to do fan, one I never thought I would get or do. And it was awesome. And I have so many good memories from it. I have great friends like Carlin and Bart are still two of my great friends. I made a million friends. Like I'm sitting in the same office that I was in. I'm only one studio away. Chris Olivero and Spike Eskin have been incredible to me. So I never thought of it as like a promotion or demotion. I thought of it as like getting back on the track that I was always originally on, which was always doing national broadcasting of some kind.
And when you look at the two brands, FAN and CBS Sports Radio, like I'm sure Greg Giannotti's goal when he was at the network was to get to WFAN. I'm sure Brandon Tierney's goal when he was at CBS Sports Radio was to get to WFAN. Damon Amendolara probably wouldn't mind an FAN show at some point in his future. Do you think that goal might have been different for you because you didn't grow up a diehard FAN listener?
Yeah, I think, but you know what? When I first moved to New York, which was like almost 20 years ago, I definitely knew like if you want to do sports broadcasting in any kind of meaningful way, like you have to get to the fan in some capacity.
Yeah.
And so I did as like an update person, you know, doing midnight to 6 a.m., Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's Eve, you know, and got a little bit of a taste. And the longer you're in New York, the more fan becomes a part of your life, you know? So even though I didn't grow up with it, I understand how big it is, the impact of it. And I am grateful for what it did for my career. Like I'll give you an anecdotal story. So we were just in Kansas City for the NFL draft and we're sitting at the NFL Experience, the Fan Fest. So it's 200,000 basically Kansas City Chiefs fans. This is pretty Kansas City type of event. And all of a sudden we're in the middle of a segment and this guy walks by and looks at me and goes, "Hey, bleep James Dolan." I was like, "Hey," and he wasn't even wearing like a Jets jersey or a Giants jersey. It was just very funny because I'm like, for some people, I will always be associated with WFAN and I'm really proud of that. I mean, getting to number one in the ratings at WFAN is probably one of my biggest career achievements. And now I'm lucky enough to say that I've got a nationally syndicated radio show that I get to do with one of my great friends and I'm having a blast. So I consider myself pretty lucky.
You've launched a few shows on a few platforms. Was the pressure different replacing Mike Francesa?
Oh God. Yes. I mean, yeah, I definitely that pressure. I don't even know if I unpacked fully how much pressure that was because in the moment, when you're preparing for the show and it's exciting and you're getting to know your co-hosts and kind of the lay of the land at fan and everything, there's almost too much going on for that to really sink in. Like,
right.
Oh boy, you know, this person was with our audience for 30 years or whatever. And now we're about to ask them to come along the ride with us. That was an extreme amount of pressure, but I also felt so comfortable with Carlin and Bart that it always sort of eased it because when you're in the room and in the studio doing a radio show, you can't think about the hundreds of thousands of people or whatever who are listening. Like that, you'd lose it, you know, it'd be impossible to quantify the audience. So in the room, it always felt comfortable and like there wasn't a lot of pressure. But I mean, yeah, on the outside, that was crazy time.
Did you feel like you had the support of Mike when you guys took over?
You know, I went and met
did
with
you
him.
Want, did you want the support? Like, did, yeah, was that definitely. Something that you valued?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I remember going to meet with him after I got the job, and we met with me and Mark Chernoff and him here at the Fan, and he actually gave me some good advice. So he did. And then, you know, I think that I asked him if he would ever want to come on the show, and he said, absolutely not. So I was like, all right. I think there was maybe a lot more going on than I was privy to. You know, listen, I'm not going to know everything, and that's totally fine. But I think there might have been more going on, like behind the scenes with that transition, maybe, than I ever knew. But again, I don't know.
Like in terms of like maybe he wanted to come back even when he left.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if he was having second thoughts the whole time.
Right. Even before he officially or retired, yeah. Was he already starting to think about potentially coming back?
Exactly. Like, was he done with it? You know, obviously he wasn't, because, you know, it didn't take only but 3 months we were on the air. Four months, I think he said in April he was coming back. So that's not a long amount of time, you know? So I don't know if he was thinking about that the whole time or not. Again, not privy to that. And I'll never know.
Did you feel like you had the support of the company when he came back? Like, was your show still supported and prioritized?
I think so. I mean, listen, I think there were a lot of people in this company who placed a bet on me and Carlin and Bart and wanted to be right and wanted to show like, hey, we can do this kind of transition, and we can do, like, you know, Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. We can do Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. Maybe we'll find another hit and we'll just be able to go on seamlessly. So I do think that people had our back in the company, definitely.
But at the same time, like 3 or 4 months is not long enough to prove, like, no matter how it was going at the start, it's got to be frustrating that you were only given a few months, because there definitely was plenty of time for you guys to, you would have expected to be given enough time to gel and develop chemistry to have a successful show. And you really didn't get that opportunity.
You know, here's the thing though, that I've realized, and I think I realized this at the time, but I definitely realize it now, which is, this is a lot like show business. You know, sports talk radio is a lot like what I expect show business is like. So to ever think that you are owed anything, can expect anything, I just never had that mentality. Like, I think anything can happen at any time. And this is just sort of the life we've chosen when you work in media. You know, things happen really fast, and you don't always understand all the reasons why, or sometimes you do, and you don't always get to like fully tell your story or whatever, but that's just sort of how it goes. And I just am the kind of person, I never think anything's owed to me ever, because you got to work so hard and you've got to really try to stand out. And the moment you take any of that stuff for granted, like, you're screwed. And so even in the moment, I never thought, oh, they owed us like more time. Like, it's there. We're at the whim of bosses and people who are much higher up the ladder. And that's okay. That's just how it goes.
Were you in the building when James Dolan went in studio with Carton and Roberts earlier this year?
Yeah, I was. So I was doing my show. So Carton and Evan do the show from Mike Francesa Studios. Yeah. We're literally the next studio over. It's not even 10 feet. We're in the CBS Sports Radio. So yeah, they knew that I was there. I went about my regular day. I never crossed paths with him or anything. But yeah, they knew. His people knew I was here, and I was made aware that he was coming in.
Was that strange? And for those who don't know, in 2018, you had called Dolan a vile piece of trash after he wrote a song titled I should have known about Harvey Weinstein and Dolan lacking any sort of self-awareness, I guess expected to be applauded for that song or something. But in response to your criticism, he had barred MSG from doing any business with Odyssey, which was Entercom at the time. So then you fast forward to earlier this year, he's in studio with Carton and Roberts down the hall from you talking about facial recognition technology to keep his critics from entering the garden. So like, what was that? Was that strange with that dynamic, all that going on?
You know, I thought it was a good idea that they had him on because the first and foremost, like, as much as sports talk radio is about like personalities and ego and like larger than life people, people who are good at sports talk radio and have done this a long time know it's about your audience. It's always about your audience, and you can never lose sight of that. And that moment in New York, the facial recognition software and everything going on at the Garden was a huge story. So to get Dolan at the time, that's a big coup, and that's great for the Carton and Roberts audience. So I totally understood. I thought that's, you know, and the fact that he was willing to come in and do it, I totally understood it. And I thought it, that was a smart, that's a smart radio move. It's a smart booking.
So right after the interview, Carton and Roberts were getting criticized by Andrew Marchand on Twitter. And then Marchand called into the show and they discussed it on air. And one of the gripes that Marchand had with the interview was that they didn't mention you during it. So do you think that your name should have been broached during that interview, or even just in general, the topic of like Dolan, should Dolan have been asked about the decision to sever ties with Odyssey based on that criticism?
I would never tell another radio host or host how to do their job. I would never, ever do that. I would never, I'm not in the room.
Yeah.
I'm not privy to their pre-production and what they wanted to get out of that interview. So I would never criticize another host for that. It was their James Dolan interview. They got to do with it what they wanted. And that is totally, totally up to them. Never up Fair. To me.
Was there concern for your job after the Dolan fallout at all?
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely. Definitely. And I appreciate that Odyssey stuck by me at the time, because that was a very delicate situation. I mean, when one thing that I said that, you know, has these ripple effects in the company, and to people who weren't even on the sports side, you know, on the music side and other things, I was really, cause Dolan owns so many music venues, obviously, I was very appreciative that they stuck with me. I thought that they would, because they had been supportive of me that whole time, even the day of, when I did say that about him, when I called him that name, which got too personal, and I'll totally admit that, but yeah, I was definitely worried. Absolutely. And I know that there were obviously some conversations that happened. So yeah, I appreciate that Odyssey stuck by me.
Was there concern for your job after you dropped the hot take that kids shouldn't be up on the podium during athletes' press conferences earlier this year?
Not my job, my life. I'm fearing for my life after that.
Yeah,
when I said, because Nick Sirianni, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, had his kids up on the podium. And I was like, keep them off. You know, I'll double down on that take.
Did you know that the take had the potential to take off like it did when you said it?
No. What's so funny about that one? That was like an off the cuff thing that I kind of said that I do believe, actually. So it's good if you believe your takes. That's a good thing. But I said it like off the cuff, you know, because we happened to be talking to an Eagles beat writer at the time, Elliot Shore Parks, who's great. And I said it off the cuff, and I was joking about this to Perloff. I'm like, you know, we spend all this time crafting these takes and trying to be as smart as we can about them, and backing them up with all this information and everything. And lo and behold, it's just like the one thing I said off the cuff that got like the most attention that week in Super Bowl, where I'm like getting booked on podcasts and, you know, people are coming at me and my mentions and all this stuff. And a million people picked up the story. So it just goes to show, like, sometimes you just don't overthink it. Just go with your gut. If something bothers you, you know, just say it. You might get more of a reaction than your crafted, you know, LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan take that you've been working on for 6 months, you know?
Yeah, no, I maintain that it's not a big deal, kids at press conferences. And obviously I come at it from a different perspective. I'm not in the room asking athletes questions. And honestly, for what I do at Awful Announcing, a kid at a press conference probably gives me a better chance of having something to write about or a unique headline than just the traditional press conference where most players are trying their best to avoid saying anything even remotely headline worthy. But people didn't think you were just against kids at press conferences. It on social media, like, it was like they thought you were actually just against kids in general.
Which is hilarious because I'm a mom. I have a 4-year-old. But I don't put him on the show and I don't bring him to my contract negotiations or whatever. Like, I don't make him a part of my professional life. I mean, we tell stories sometimes about our kids, but that's just going to be expected. But yeah, I don't bring him in and have him sit at a microphone and, you know, trade takes about, you know, the Phillies with Perloff. So it's, yeah, I thought that was funny. People thought I was really anti-kid. Like, geez, don't let my kid see that.
Yeah. So the only thing that I think is in terms of athletes almost using kids as a sort of protection from any hard-hitting questions. I mean, obviously athletes, they don't shy away from not answering the hard questions. And even more recently, like, if they don't want to go to a press conference, they just don't go.
Right. Yes. You can just get fined by the league and who cares, right? You know, if you're an NBA player, you blow your nose with 25 grand. So like, it doesn't matter if you get fined, but it was not just about like, so where this, the genesis of this kind of came from, cause I've always not loved this. And it was not just about, you know, having your kid up there means you're not going to ask tough questions. Cause generally guys only bring their kids up when they win.
After a win. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be weird to have your kid up there after you're like, oh, you just lost game 7 of the finals. You know, here's Billy.
Right.
But it was also, I think, kind of used sometimes when, like, if an athlete had like an image problem, then they would bring the kid up. Like, I famously remember like Jason Kidd, after he had some negative headlines, like, used to bring his kid up. And I always felt like the kid was kind of getting used a little bit in like this PR campaign. You know, listen, we're all proud of our kids and, you know, proud to be parents, but at the same time, like, it's 10 minutes at a press conference.
Yeah. On the topic of controversial press conferences, Kyrie Irving, you actually covered some of his high school games when you were with MSG earlier in your career. Were you there just covering the games, or like, did you get to actually speak with him, interview him at times?
So one of the big breaks that I had early on in my career was getting to be a sideline reporter for the MSG High School Game of the Week. I mean, I am still so grateful to Mike Quick and Jackie Lyons at MSG. They gave me a huge opportunity. It was the first time I was on in New York. I got an agent off of that job. I mean, that was a big moment. And at first I was the high school sideline reporter for lacrosse, and then the basketball and football sideline reporter moved on and got a job. And then I became basketball and football. So I was covering 3 major sports in the New York area. And Kyrie Irving was going to St. Patrick's at the time. And so we did cover one of his games. Remember interviewing him and talking with him. And then not that long after, because he went to Duke for a year and then went right to the NBA, he won the Rookie of the Year for the Cavaliers and then came to Sports Illustrated, where I was doing digital video interviews, and came and he was like, hey, high school, like MSG. Like, yeah, I know. And there we are again. And then later, even later in my career, right after the Cavs had lost in the finals to the Warriors, I think the second time, after Kyrie had already won a title, but then they lost to the Cavs, I believe, the next season.
Yes.
I was hosting a red carpet for SI had 50 most fashionable athletes, or they did that every year. And we went out to LA and did a whole event, and I was doing the red carpet for them live stream. And Kyrie came and stopped, and him and Iguodala were there together, and I got a great interview, and he kind of laid the breadcrumbs that he was going to be leaving the Cavs, and it got picked up everywhere. So I've crossed paths with him a few times throughout our careers, but not lately.
Yeah, I mean, for all the controversial things that he says, and even the battles with the media, like he does seem like somebody that tries to mean well. Like he seems like somebody that the things that he says that he has said and gotten in trouble for, some of them certainly are reprehensible, but it largely he comes across as somebody that would be easy to get along with and like easy to talk to privately, at least.
You know, I'm not sure about that. This is like the hard thing, right? Is, and this can be hard sometimes, I think, for people, you work in this business long enough, like I always had kind of been like a Kyrie defender, you know, because of that. It's like, hey, I first met the kid, he was like 17 years old. And, you know, but at some point, like it becomes impossible to defend. And I would never even try. Like when you're trafficking right. the kind of things that Kyrie was doing earlier this year, like you're going to lose support. You might gain some supporters, I don't know, but you're going to lose supporters, rightly so. And he lost me with promoting that video, that the anti-Semitic sure. video. Like there's just, you know, it's unfortunate because there are so many people who are rooting for him. And I think a lot of people, myself included, felt really disappointed and let down. And, you know, that's for him. And I know he probably doesn't care, but he definitely lost a lot of people who had been in his corner.
Would you have Jim Brewer on your radio show to talk Mets again?
So Jim's another one, right? Jim is awesome. And you get to know him personally. And it's like, he's funny. He guest hosted radio shows yeah. with me on Fan. He was hilarious. He was great with the callers. And then he says other certain things that, listen, here's the thing about comedians. I'm never really sure where the joke is. So I think that they should be given maybe a little bit more leeway. But listen, Jim knows too. Like he says things that are controversial and it grows his audience in one way and it diminishes it in another way. But I don't think comedians care as much because they're so much about the material. And if it's funny, it's funny. But I haven't talked to Jim lately. No.
But are you kind of surprised in the direction that he went the last couple of years, leaning into somewhat of a far right audience? And like you said, you had him in studio, you co-hosted with him. I would imagine that's not what the off-air conversations were.
No, I mean, I don't think it's like a, he uses it in his, I don't think he's like a bit. I mean, I think he generally.
No, I don't think it's really based on some of the interviews and yeah. clips. Like it doesn't seem like just a bit.
No. And listen, I would never presume to talk for Jim Brewer, who is like so incredibly talented, but I just think that I think the pandemic just sort of, I think it affected people in a lot of different ways, you know, yeah. I do. And I think that we're still kind of undoing a lot of that, unpacking some of it. And I think people just responded to our world getting changed and being turned upside down and whatever your local laws were versus other states. I think people just reacted to it all in very unique ways. And, you know, like the Kyrie, like vaccine mandates and things like that. I think people just reacted to them in different ways. Some people are just like, all right, line up, take it, no problem. Quarantine, no problem. And I think other people did have big problems with it. And I think right. that's where you saw it start to, you know, his material start to change a bit.
Yeah. And if it was just a bit, if it was just comedy material, like you used to host a show with Artie Lang. So it's not like you're not used to a wide range of comedy.
Yes. And Artie was, I'm so grateful to Artie. I don't know. He just liked me. I have no, like he came to Sports Illustrated once for an interview. He was promoting his second book, I believe. And Peter King happened to be in the office that day. And I'm like, Peter, come in and sit with me. He already loves you. Like, let's just do a three-way conversation here. And it was so much fun. And then Artie invited me on his show. And then he just kept having me back and kept having yeah. me back. And I just, he's the guy who is the funniest person in the room, no matter what room you're in. Like, I think you're even in a room full of comics. And I think Artie is the guy who's making everyone laugh. I mean, he is so it's just so freaking funny. Like, yeah, I was always so impressed with how easy it came to him. It's just always funny is funny and Artie is funny.
Yeah. How did it feel getting the wrath of Aaron Rodgers a little bit earlier this year? Like he didn't name you directly like he has with some other sports media people, but he was definitely responding to your interview with Romeo Doubs when he complained and he said something about like tired voices trying to make him look bad.
Which not at all like what we were doing, but it's so funny because Aaron Rodgers always gets so upset when people take him out of context. He took that whole thing out of context. Yeah. Like, dude, a pot, meat, kettle. Anyway, yeah, we had Romeo Doubs on, just come off his rookie wide receiver year for the Green Bay Packers. And we were having like a nice conversation with him. He was fine. He seemed into it, you know, his energy level was good. There's all the things that you're looking for in a good guest. And he was, I forgot what the question was before, but he was talking about, I think it actually might've been about Jordan Love, but it was like about becoming friends with guys and getting to know them and trying to build chemistry with them. So it's like, oh, well, was there ever a moment like out of the building where you got to hang out with Aaron Rodgers and like try to build chemistry that way? And he's like, no. We didn't really hang out. And that was it. We weren't like, oh, you know, or maybe I was like, I might have said, oh, like that's a shame or something like that. But we didn't like editorialize that more. We get it. There's a 20-year age gap between the two guys. Doubs was just being honest. And then it got totally caught like wildfire because I think a lot of people, there is this narrative out there that Rodgers is sort of aloof and maybe he's up here and everyone else is down here. But I didn't create that for Rodgers. Right. Like this is years in the making for him. We just asked Romeo Doubs a question. So I'm not trying to play like, oh, innocent me. We never thought that was going to do millions
of views. And if anything, I think you're offering the opportunity for that narrative about Rodgers to be changed, like thinking like Romeo Doubs probably he's got to have like some sort of story to tell about spending time with Rodgers. And you're never expecting the answer to just be like, oh, we've never hung out before.
Well, and also I remember being able to having done a show with Bart Scott for 2 years, Bart used to talk about all the time how Monday Night Football, he'd have guys over to the house. They'd go out to restaurants. Like he was sort of the quarterback of the defense in a lot of those, you know, for some of those Jets teams.
Right.
Because he's this big personality and he's such a, you know, gregarious guy. So he would have guys over all the time. So I just sort of thought, well, I'm sure the offense is probably doing this too. So I had at least a little insight that athletes do this, yeah, that they do have each other over, you know, during the season just to try to, you know, shoot the breeze and get to know each other.
How do you think Rodgers is going to do with the New York media?
He'll be fine. He's going to love this too, because he's going to get a lot of attention. And I think he likes having the attention. I'm just curious what he's going to do with it after football. Like he's so into like spirituality and medicinal, like alternative medicine, and like to admit that you've gone on like multiple ayahuasca trips, like that is wild for a current quarterback who is about to be a future Hall of Famer. Like good on him for being so open about his life. So he's going to have all this attention. I'm just curious what he does with it. Like he's not going to like a broadcast booth to like put on a blazer and do a Titans Colts game. Like I think he's got some bigger things planned.
No, but I mean, I wouldn't have thought that he was going to be someone in the running for Jeopardy either.
Smartest guy in the room. On Brandon.
And I think like there's a lot of talk about whether or not he's going to succeed with the New York media. And I think most of that concern is coming from outside of New York, because I do think, like you said, he is so open and honest. And that's something that the New York media appreciates. Like they go after the people that have media boycotts or attack the fans or attempt to hide from something that the athletes said, and that's not Aaron Rodgers at all.
Well, let's be honest too, the winning, like if they're winning and things are going well, he obviously can be very charming. I mean, we watched the introductory press conference. He said the Lombardi's trophy is feeling a little lonely. I mean, he knows that is red meat to the Jets fans. and to the media. He's way too savvy, I think, for this to go really off the rails. And everyone's like on the lookout for it, which I think makes it even more like everyone's going to be on their best behavior. He gives thoughtful answers. The fact that he started doing Pat McAfee every Tuesday, like, I can only thank Aaron Rodgers. He's given us so much content. We have a running bit on our show where, can I curse on this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. Our running bit is, what the fuck is Aaron Rodgers up to today? And we just bleep out the F word. And it's hilarious. And it's such a variety of things that we can bring it out whenever, you know, whenever Aaron Rodgers does.
Yeah, no, the McAfee show definitely has showed Aaron Rodgers in a different light, because previously he was somebody that, I mean, he was a superstar, but he was still thought of as being quiet and maybe not having that much of a personality. And then 3 years ago, he goes on McAfee's show. He starts talking about aliens, and like, it's all been crazy since then.
Yeah. If it's not for all athletes, right? Or it's not for all public people, but for him, like, he seems pretty comfortable in his own skin. He doesn't seem like he has, like, you know, the vaccination stuff aside, doesn't seem like he has a lot to hide.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like he's obviously very comfortable when he wants the conversation, it seems like, to go in a different direction. And that's a rare bird. I mean, that wasn't Tom Brady ever. You weren't getting anything like that from Tom, Peyton Manning. I mean, nothing. So the fact that we have this all-time great quarterback who's opening up to us like this, I hope he plays forever.
Yeah. As a Jets fan, I concur. Maggie, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. You were awesome.
Brandon, thanks so much for inviting me on the pod. Love Awful Announcing. Usually like it when I see my name in Awful Announcing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much always good stuff. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm Brandon Contis. Thanks for listening. Be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.